Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and this week we'll be talking to the CEO of AssureHedge, a company who's simplifying and modernizing currency hedging for companies large and small that operate internationally. Please hit subscribe to keep up with this and the latest in FinTech news. All right, this week I'm glad to have the CEO of AssureHedge, Barry McCarthy, who has 15 years experience working on trading and hedging products and has struck out on his own with AssureHedge, a company that's trying to make that more accessible, these kind of products that are important for companies that have currency issues. So Barry, thanks for joining us.
Hi, John. Thank you very much for your kind invitation to be on your podcast, and I'm really delighted to be here today.
Yeah, thanks for joining. And what is it exactly that AssureHedge does?
The problem we're solving here is for businesses that operate internationally. For example, a U.S. software firm might win a contract in Canada, and they may not be paid the Canadian dollars that is part of that deal for 3 months into the future or 6 months. And the problem that's facing that business is that the value of the Canadian dollar could fall in value in that 3 month or 6 months window. When they receive the currency and try to change it back to US dollars, the rate may be a lot worse by that time than they had budgeted when they initially agreed to do the work. So this is a typical problem that faces any business or individual, for that matter, that operates internationally. It's about currency exposure, understanding it, and where AssureHedge steps in is we provide the connectivity and the simple to use product that a regular business can mitigate and remove that currency risk. So it works a little bit like currency insurance. A small insurance premium is paid, and that eliminates the risk, and so you can have certainty over your currency rates in the future.
So whether it's the exchange rate goes up or down, you're already locked in. You know what you're going to receive, and then you can go about what your business is really focused on.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, most successful business people that I know don't like gambling. I mean, they become successful because they don't want risks. I mean, the idea is to remove risk from your business and operate in an environment of certainty. In many ways, currency risk and currency exposure is often one of the only neglected parts of risk in a company. The issue for companies is they don't many companies have this risk and they don't really have a confidence in the products that they get from a bank. They're very, very confusing. The whole area is left neglected in terms of good products and effective products for small businesses. And so what ends up happening is that most businesses with currency risk don't do anything at all to protect themselves. So they basically leave it to chance. And that's dangerous in terms of leaving risk on your balance sheet, and leaving risk in your business.
Sure, especially these days with Brexit volatility, the trade wars. Even between Japan and Korea, I saw they're having a spat that's definitely affecting their currency values. So, yeah, it's out there. But, yeah, I always thought, you know, even a medium-sized business would go to their bank and hedge these types of things. But that's happening less than I would assume, I guess.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the example that I often give is hedging is already there, okay? This is the thing. If you're a business that has won a big contract overseas and you're concerned about the risk of the currency, you can get access to the products to some degree. You're not going to get a product that you understand. Usually you're probably going to be dealing over the phone, and it can take a long time to even get a proposal or some sort of a quote. There's a lot of human processes here. It doesn't make sense to a lot of small businesses. They're left completely confused by what banks typically will try and sell them. And the final part is that the products are extremely expensive. So because banks don't, you know, they haven't digitalized the FX and hedging part of their businesses on the whole. So the fact that they're relatively inefficient, they must pass on the cost to the customer then. So the cost is very high. If you're a smaller business, if you're anything less than a large corporate business, your cost of hedging is going to be very, very high. This is the problem we're really solving in AssureHedge, is that we've managed to digitalize the whole process so that it brings hedging to everybody in a really simple, fast, and digital way.
Oh, it sounds like a lot of the advantages that you have with are similar to like a lot of other fintechs, where they can start with all new technology. They don't have all the legacy systems and overhead that entails and maintenance. They're doing Fortran and COBOL, still maintenance on these mainframes. And it's hard for these larger banks to implement new technologies and make things with a nice, smooth interface, which is, I guess, is a little bit misleading for large banks, saying, yes, we can offer that. There's nothing special. But the new companies like yours can make it easy, a nice UI, cheaper. And those are qualitative, significant differences that drive usage.
Absolutely, yeah. It's kind of funny because banks generally were dismissive of what the value we are bringing. They just assumed that they're already adequately providing products. And it was kind of funny when we were raising investment capital a while back. One individual potential investor was sort of giving us a grilling on the value proposition, and he kind of turned around. He says, "Well, I don't see what's so special about what you're doing. I can just ring my bank and they'll do what you've just showed me." And I says, "Well, ring your bank then." And he looked at me a bit surprised. Yeah. I want you to put it to the test. So he rang his bank. He got put around to two or three different departments. And finally, here's the funniest part of this story. It's a major bank, well-known international bank. And he finally got put through to the right department. And he was told to call back the next day because the team was on a training day.
Oh,
true story.
That was great for you.
Yeah. And he ended up investing. But the funny thing is, we turned around then and we were able to price up a bespoke over-the-counter hedging instrument. And we made it look really, really easy. It is a complex instrument. It's easy to get confused when you're dealing with a traditional provider. Our whole platform is about simplification. So it's as easy as buying travel insurance, or it's as easy as buying, you know, insurance for your home. You use a simple quote generator that asks you how much risk do you have in the currency, how long do you want protection for, and it gives you a quote, and you pay for it straight away. You get emailed a PDF confirmation, it updates your account, and you're done. The whole thing can be done in a few minutes, and that's the big difference. Whereas if you try and deal with a bank, it can actually take you up to 6 months even to open the facilities with a large bank. It's an ordeal. We have a big advantage here. We have a big advantage over traditional providers of this type of product.
And you worked in this area for a long time. Is that what drove, was it currency trading specifically, or what drove your initial idea to start this?
Yeah, well initially I got a bug for trading financial markets from a pretty weirdly young age. I was buying and selling stocks when I was in my mid-teenage years. Which was quite weird, but I was just interested in why stock prices would go up and down, and trying to figure it out. And I started trading stocks. And then I think what set me over the edge is I watched a movie called Trading Places with Eddie Murphy in it. Do you remember that movie?
Yeah, sure. Classic.
And the trading pits in Chicago, then I just thought were the best thing I'd ever seen in that movie. And that's what I wanted. I wanted to be one of those guys in the trading pits. That was my goal. And I actually followed through on it. But the problem was, by the time I got to Chicago, I went to Chicago then. And by the time I got there, after I finished college, they were moving people to the screens away from the physical floor trading. So, so I went around looking for jobs. I ended up getting a job with a Chicago based, proprietary trading firm called Geneva Trading, and they're pretty big. So there was called prop trading, proprietary trading, where they train you and you trade private capital, and you work for yourself effectively. trading the markets. And,
yeah, you're playing with your own money or the firm's money.
Yeah, yeah, and that was fantastic. I loved it. I mean, I loved doing that for so many years. I did it in Chicago, London, Singapore. Got to travel the world, and I built up, you know, a lot of trading teams, and I got into high frequency trading. So I'm not a techie by training, but I had to, you know, halfway through my trading career, the game changed, and what was once done by people suddenly became obsolete, and so I had to go and learn how to use technology. I had to learn how to develop software, how to work with quantitative analysts, back testing on MATLAB, and so I did a big shift personally in my skill set, because I wanted to stay in the markets and do the thing that I loved, which was trading. And I was quite successful at automated trading then, and that led into the creation of AssureHedge, where the entire philosophy I have about AssureHedge is that there is fantastically useful financial instruments available in the system. Okay, the problem is that the everyday business is not getting access to them. There is trillions a day of transactions in all sorts of financial products and financial derivatives, and it's almost all done by automated algorithmic trading systems and hedge funds. You know, the farmer, the small farmer or the small business who's worried about FX or interest rates is not getting the benefit of the economic utility of these instruments. And so I started with the view that I know how to access these instruments. I know how to trade them. I have the systems to trade them. Why would I not create a bridge between these, you know, the market access, the actual utility of these instruments, and how I can convey that to a small business in a simple way, to show them if they have risk, by paying a relatively small amount of money, they can remove that risk completely. I love that concept. You know, the original floor trading in Chicago was created to help farmers remove the risk of their crop prices. And they would meet with cereal producers and others who would take that risk off them. So, you know, you'd buyers who wanted to lock in the price of grains because they needed that as part of their production process. And then you'd farmers in springtime, who just spent all of their money planting the crop, and they're not going to get the benefit till the autumn time. I think it's brilliant. It's the economic utility of getting these two people to meet and agree a contract to set the price in the future. And that removes the risk from both of them. And that's the guiding principle of what we do at AssureHedge. Everything we do is about getting the economic utility of these types of hedging instruments out to smaller businesses that haven't never had them before.
You know, Dublin, where you're based, is known as a tech hub. Google, Facebook, Microsoft have operations there. Did that make it easy when you were getting off the ground and hiring, or was it tough to match what those guys were offering?
It's been tough. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. It's tough. Yeah, yeah, it's tough.
They drive up the salaries, do they?
Yeah, they drive up the salaries in a massive way. In a massive way. They don't just drive up the salaries though. It's all the benefits that they give to people as well. You know, they give. I've been into the Google office in Dublin twice now, and it's incredible. I mean, they have this amazing kitchen that serves like five-star food all day long. You know, they got a chef whose his only job is to provide the most amazing desserts and pastries. Like, so when people start there, they usually put on a stone in their first month. It's called the Google Stone, because they're getting all this amazing food. And
okay.
You know, and that's just an example of all the perks. Like they get so many perks, and it's great. But you know, the funny thing is that there's a bit of a trend now. There's so many of these type of tech jobs in Dublin that there's almost a culture developing of people who are kind of anti that model. They're willing to take a substantial pay cut to work on something that they feel is a little bit more authentic and a bit more real. And so there's a feeling of a little bit of fakeness about the model that, you know, the large US tech cult or culture they create, you know, within these places. And you get a lot of developers who have come to us because they believe in the value that we are bringing. Many people have suffered the problem that we're solving, in terms of they've lost money on a currency, or they get the problem, or someone in their family knows the problem. And, you know, a lot of people buy into working for us because they know we're solving a problem that's important. And they want to work on a project that their work makes a real impact in the marketplace, and they can see that. So we have actually managed to get some amazingly top people in the team who could be working on much better salaries, but they choose with Google or whoever, or Facebook, but they choose to work with us because they believe in the project. But
yeah, there's generally nothing like having ownership in what you're doing and moving things along a little bit. Whereas in a large company, your focus is so narrow. You're just doing maintenance rather than creating. Yeah,
that's it. Yeah. I mean, yeah, the development team that we have building a platform that is going to be the industry standard in the world for hedging, for accessing over-the-counter options and forwards swaps, and it's going to be the industry standard benchmark for how to connect to what is a very fragmented, obsolete marketplace for hedging. So we will be the ones that will be known as having modernized and taken most of that market someday. And it is currently a $1 trillion a day marketplace. Dominated
So the market is there. How do you reach people? How do people find out about you? Are you doing direct to consumer? I saw you do white label as well. You're hitting from institutions down to the end users, or just to the institution?
Yeah, well, we don't target the end user at all anymore. We stopped that because we want to focus on the channel partners such as banks, currency brokers, financial intermediaries, financial technology platforms, banking software platforms like Temenos. So we're basically very much a technology platform that solves all of the problems around how do I access and use over-the-counter options and forwards, and how do I connect and distribute them to my client base. So we work mostly with currency brokers right now, and we're starting to work with banks. We're working with Temenos, the banking software firm. But that's the route to market for us. We don't go direct. We don't go to the end customer at all anymore, but we build the products that they use, and we supply the financial instruments ultimately that they use, but we don't reach out to them directly or target them.
Oh, okay. So I imagine security would be one of the big hurdles that that these institutions would be concerned about. What else do they usually have roadblocks about, or do objections you might have to overcome?
Yeah, with a bank, we learned. I mean, yeah, it's always a journey with this sort of thing. But the big thing I learned. Yeah, of course. Yeah, every day is a school day, as they say, and we learned with big banks that big banks wanted to talk to us, and we would get a lot of initial interest in the bank. So conceptually about this idea of the bank outsourcing the digitalization of their hedging and risk management function to the corporate business customer. They like the thoughts of immediately having a product to serve to their customers, because often they don't at the moment in many banks. And so we'd find we get a lot of interest, but it would just abruptly end at the point of a decision. It would end, and we managed to figure out what the problem was. The problem for us is that the bank itself has all of the raw materials and ingredients to deliver the product that we deliver. So they have the regulation. They have the access to the market itself, you know, the raw interbank access to the instruments. They have the customers, they have the capital. So they pretty much have all of the ingredients to make the cake, but they can't. They're not agile enough. They can't get all the different parts of the bank to work together. The investment banking part doesn't know how to connect to the commercial banking part. The compliance and regulation department gets concerned and shuts everything down because they don't have full oversight of the whole process. So the problem for the bank is the product requires lots of different parts of the bank that are in different departments, and they end up abandoning any attempts to try and do it themselves because it's just seen as a drain and too much hassle and, you know, too many roles internally. So we came back with a modified offer to a bank, which is a a hedging as a service offering, that the pitch that we changed to and the product that we actually offer the banks now is we embed our platform into the bank itself, and they plug in all of the different parts of the bank that are needed to create the product, and then our platform runs that for them instead of us coming in and you know, technically facing their customer and offering the product and having the contractual relationship. We remove
too much outsourcing.
Yeah,
that's removing it too far outside the bank. So you have to embed yourself into their systems. So this becomes a larger implementation than your initial plan.
Yeah, it does. But you see, the thing is, we're already doing this already. We built this as a platform that is powered by API services. So what that means is that all we got to do is plug out our own services, such as compliance, such as the pricing of the products, such as the trading module, and plug in the banks. So then we would have to go in and work with the bank to figure out how to construct the modules for pricing and for trading on their end. And then the beautiful end result here is that the trading side of the bank gets trading flow that is non-toxic. So these would all be transactions that would be on the offer side. So these would be just, you know, simple buy flow of an option. So the trading flow is really, really good. It's the type of trading flow that the trading desks in the bank would want. The commercial business side of the bank is happy because they are getting to offer a really cool new product to their corporate clients that nobody else has, and they can do it quickly and digitally. And so they're delighted. The compliance team is delighted because with our platform, they have full oversight of everything that's going on in the compliance remit for them. So, you know, in other words, they can pull down all the data they need if the regulator requests it. They have a full audit trail. They've got a full audit trail of everything that client has done. They have on-demand reporting, such as reporting, and you know, if you when you sell an over-the-counter hedging instrument, it has to be reported now to a trade repository. So all of the boring, painful jobs, we have built modules that automate that. So
you're powering all of that back end stuff for them.
All the back end stuff, yeah. And
so you have to build some of the reporting and the data access, and that met their need. They actually went forward. You got something done at a large bank, which is an accomplishment.
Yeah, yeah. And one of our main routes to market now is targeting banks, and we figured how best to target lots of banks in one go. We found software companies that already banks are outsourcing their main core banking backends to. And the one company we've had the most progress with is called Temenos here in Europe. And they go into banks that typically have legacy systems and are trying to change it. So they will approach Temenos and they'll say, listen, we wanna clear out everything we have and install your banking software and to modernize what we're doing. And that's what Temenos does. They have 3,000 banks as clients. And so our thinking is we can partner with them, and then they can add an extra module, which is actually the AssureHedge hedging services. Then the integration with a bank is really, really easy if we can work with software providers that have already done the integration. It should be a relatively easy, you know, integration.
They're already in the door, so you're just tagging along with them a bit.
Yeah, and then our services and our all of our APIs then can speak to the other modules that needs to, such as the accounting modules, the, you know, any sort of modules that, like anything that we need to tell the rest of the bank can be done automatically through, because we'd already be on the same system and we can update other parts of it. So it's a dream for us to work with these types of banking software companies. So that's really where we're spending a lot of our time focused on at the moment.
Hmm. So nobody else has worked on anything like this. You don't have to name them, but do you have any competition doing something like this?
You see, it's such a big space. There's always there's always different firms doing different parts of this. But nobody's come at it, as far as I know, in the way that we're approaching it, right? Which is pretty unique from anybody else. And it looked a bit crazy when I first started this approach, because people said that you are apps. We were told we were off our rockers by more than one, you know, well-qualified person.
That's a sign you're on the right track in Silicon Valley.
Yeah, but I said, look, here's the way I want to do it. The way I want to do it is that we needed to get regulated as well ourselves under investment regulation in Europe, MiFID regulation. And for a startup, you know, to say that, it's quite insane, because you know, typically you need huge resources to get the regulation. And we were sort of uninvestable. One of the contingencies of my business plan was that we had the regulation. So, you know, the typical VC investors were going to obviously not agree to invest in us until they saw the regulation. But we got a few amazing angel investors to come into the company, and who believed in the vision, and they backed us early on when it would not have, you know, no VC in the world would have passed their test at all. Because
how did you find your first angel? But this is a leap I think a lot of people are always afraid of, you know, if they're going to start their venture. How do you find those first people to invest?
I don't have a playbook for it. I mean, I guess I'm lucky.
I'm sure it's different for every company. Sure.
Yeah, I got a bit lucky. If you really believe in something and you make the decision that it's going to work, like my belief in this is that if you decide what your goal is and you commit to it, that generally things start to fall into place. You know, you get your lucky breaks, you meet the right people. If you commit to doing something and making a success and getting out there and meeting people, and you keep at it and keep at it, you normally get the breaks. So I started getting a lot of breaks because I just decided I'm committing to this model and doing this. And one of the big breaks I had was meeting some of the two first significant investors in the company. Robert Smith was the first major investor, and Rob gets what we do on a major level, in the sense that he was the CTO of a company called Getco, who are a very large high frequency trading firm in Chicago, and he built a lot of their systems and was you know, a significant part of their growth. So they would have been one of the most successful trading firms in the world. He was with them for a long time, and I managed to meet him. I did a bit of work for him as well at first. He needed some help, and I worked for him. And then I told him about the idea and how I wanted to bring all these instruments from the trading world into the real world and help real businesses. And he loved it. You know, he passionately believed it would work, and he backed it with his own money initially, and has been on our board ever since, and is a huge contributor to the strategy and to the tech side of the business. And
that's a great way to start. Yeah.
Yeah. If you have the right idea, if you have a good idea and you follow through on it and work hard at it, nearly always, I believe you'll get your breaks. You know, you will get your breaks if you're passionate. People see the passion. They see that you're working on it, you know, and that just attracts people. People see that, they want to introduce you to other people they know that can be helpful, because they see your passion and they understand your idea. And that's sort of what happened to me.
So what is the future for Assure Hedge? What's the next steps? Just getting into more banks or expanding the product line?
Yeah, it's a combination of pushing the growth of the business across Europe first. We got a good offering right now, and we're getting quite a lot of traction with our options products, particularly because there's very little in the way of digitalized FX over the counter options products in the world, and we're carving out a good niche there in what is a very big market, and we're really interested in the US as well. So we've just started in Chicago, and we have one of our guys in the Dublin office is actually we're deploying him to Chicago. Starting in September, to start out the first steps towards setting up a presence in the US, which obviously is a massive market for us, and you know, literally 10,000 potential partners there that we want to start exploring. So one of our guys will be doing a bit of initial research from September, and yeah, we would hope to start properly building out that office in the coming months then, and start focusing particularly on the SaaS hedging platform concept that we've moved to now, and start to really roll that out with our first customers in the US in the new year. Then next year is all about scale. It's really about scaling what we have. We'd obviously
catching up to the growth. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So we'd be looking then next year, be the year of growth. We'd be looking to kind of go down the venture capital road. Then next year would be about the right time for us. We were a bit too early up to now. So next year would be VC rocket fuel, taking over the world stuff.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we wish you all the luck in the world. It sounds like you've found a pain point, which is a key to success as well, something that's difficult for people to do. You solve the problem and have made it easier to handle. So that's definitely a prescription for success. So we wish you continued success. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to be on your podcast, and I've really, really enjoyed the conversation. It's a real honor for me, and yeah, delighted to share a bit of background about our story. We are setting up in the US at the moment, having previously been focused on Europe. So if any of your listeners to the podcast want to reach out to me, I'd be more than happy to have a conversation. And thanks again.
Sure. We'll put your information in the show notes for any prospective future employees. And good luck with everything.
Thank you very much.